bankers should consider waiving their rights to bonuses, according to the Prime Minister Gordon Brown. This comes following the news that the RBS group, saved by taxpayers, is to pay out £1 billion to some banking staff. I asked The Guardian's business reporter, Dan Roberts, what the government could do to stop the payouts.
Well, there's a range of measures they can do. In many cases, the government owns the majority stake in the banks involved, so it's the largest shareholder. It can force for a shareholder resolution. The government of the day, it can pass primary legislation. It could also argue the toss in court. It could ask the banks to stop paying these bonuses, and if the particular bankers decide to challenge that in court, then we can see whether they have a case when it comes to tribunal or court hearings. So the fact of the matter is that many governments have taken quite bold steps on this. Obama has implemented a $250,000 cap. President Sarkozy in France has said they won't be paying bonuses at all. So an awful lot that governments can do, actually.
What is the city saying about whether these bonuses should be paid? Because there is a school of thought that says, well, this applies to the past, it's not the future, therefore they should get what they deserve because you've got to keep the best people.
I think there's a difference between what the city is saying collectively and what individual bankers are saying when it applies to them, which is always the way. Most business people I've spoken to, including senior people in the city, are appalled at what's gone on. They're appalled at the credit crisis. They genuinely believe that bonus culture played a part in creating excessive risk-taking. Lloyd Blankfein, who's the chief executive of Goldman Sachs, who's the sort of the banker's banker, wrote an article in the FT on Monday, actually, talking about all the things that had gone wrong. So most people in the city accept this needs to be fixed. When it comes to their own bonus and their own paycheck, then obviously people are a little bit more protective, as you would be.
How likely is it, though, that we're going to see a real decision by the government? I know the news is moving on all the time. You've got the opposition saying that the government is too soft on the bankers, they need to take tougher measures and so on and so forth.
I think the government will have to move more on this. They're edging towards it. They've got a very difficult sales job over the next year or two to persuade people to accept some very, very tough medicine. The economy is in its direst straits for decades. People are going to have to accept a lot of pain and hardship. It's going to be difficult to sell that to people if the electorate thinks that others are not sharing that pain equally. And that's why I think this is so important. It's not about envy or greed or the morals of it, but it's the fact that the government needs to take the electorate with it through a very, very difficult economic time.
Ultimately, it's a £1 billion payout if it goes ahead. And that just does not sit well with the fact that you and I, have bailed this bank out in the first place.
Well, that's in the case of RBS. They're thought to have about £1 billion in bonus pool. Yeah, we've spent getting close to £20 billion on that one bank, and it does stick in the throat. RBS would argue that a lot of that money was tied up with its acquisition of ABN AMRO and therefore was in guaranteed bonuses it can't get out of. But a certain proportion of it was discretionary as well. And they're also arguing that they need to carry on paying bonuses to the profitable bits of the bank. Now, in many other organisations, it would be kind of weird if one department was doing really well. The rest of the company went down, but that department still decided it needed to pay itself a bonus. But in banking, there's been these sort of very tribal parts of the organisation that they're a bit of a law unto themselves, and they all think, well, we've had a good year, why should we suffer?
Dan Roberts, The Guardian's business reporter. Now, if you're a working parent, you may rely on your parents to give you a hand with your children. The good news is grandparents can help to boost a baby's vocabulary. However, they may struggle to provide other educational and social experiences infants need. That's according to research by the Institute of Education that also reveals that children in nurseries have better social skills but scored lower in vocabulary tests. I asked The Guardian's education reporter, Anthea Lipsett, whether this meant more for an anxious parent to get concerned about.
No, I don't think so. There are pluses and minuses from both systems. Nurseries are a very good option as far as school readiness and cognitive development goes, but it's not all about schools and how you're going to perform in them in school tests. Grandparents are very good, are in fact the best form of childcare in terms of developing a child's vocabulary.
It says that grandparents score significantly higher in vocabulary tests, but less high when it comes to sociability, and it's the reverse for the nurseries.
Mm-hmm, exactly. The problem that the research uncovers for grandparents doing childcare is that they tend to be slightly more isolated. They're possibly older, so less likely to take the children on trips to the park so that they're socialising with other children, and they're just not getting the same level of interaction with their peers as children that are in a nursery or creche setting would get.
The research has also urged the politicians to give greater support and training to grandparents, and I suppose this applies overall to all carers in whatever context.
Well, this is it. And grandparents can register as child minors and would get all sorts of training and qualifications as a result, but that would mean that they'd have to take on other children that they don't necessarily want to do. So what the researchers are really urging is for the government to give training, flexible training to grandparents and child carers that aren't conventional formal settings.
2 million, or nearly 2 million, families use grandparents. They are an essential resource for so many families in this country. Should they just continue to be content with what's going on now, or should they worry about the child's social skills and work to try and change that in some way?
There's some issue with grandparents not being involved enough in the children's centres that the government's done quite a lot to set up. So they perhaps need to reach out a little bit more to grandparents. But no, I think grandparents are a real boon for parents that are working, and often they see grandparents as the next best thing to them looking after the child for themselves. And even with this research, I'm sure that won't change parents' perceptions of how their child is brought up. They want the grandparents'
involved in the
involvement
whole thing.
And love and care and support of their child.
And you make a good point there, because it's very difficult to put a value on that love, on that support and on that care that grandparents give, because it's not something that you can measure in government statistics, is it?
No, it's not. The report doesn't obviously measure that. It's more cognitive development and educational outcomes, which are easier to measure than the love and support a grandparent will give a child that falls over and bumps his head and gets smothered in kisses by the grandparent in a way that it wouldn't by a childminder or a nursery or a creche.
But the smothering kisses bit, I'm sure that's important.
Yeah.
All right, thank you very much. Grey squirrels, it seems, are going to get their comeuppance. Well, they are in Scotland. A widespread cull is planned. It's part of a long-term campaign to control numbers throughout the UK. The aim is to protect the rarer red squirrels from eventual extinction. The Guardian Scotland correspondent Severin Carroll told me more about the scale of the cull.
They're going to be basically drawing this, in my own words, a kind of killing line from the North Sea on the east coast of Scotland near Montrose all the way across to the west coast in Argyll. It's effectively a line along the southern borders of the Scottish Highlands, and any grey squirrel they can find north of that, particularly in the Grampian area around Aberdeen, is going to be trapped and then humanely killed.
Now, there are 3.3 million greys and 160,000 reds. Why are the greys so numerous and the reds so small in comparison?
Well, the greys are just larger and tougher and fitter. They're more adaptable. They have stronger appetites, and they're much more able to live in many, many different kinds of environments. I mean, we'll see grey squirrels in the middle of Britain's biggest cities. They live in the middle of London, live in the middle of Edinburgh. Red squirrels simply can't do that. They're much shyer and smaller. They need a particular kind of habitat, a traditional old British woodland, traditionally. And also the greys carry a squirrel pox, which they're effectively immune to, but is pretty much always fatal for reds. So against that very strong competitor, the reds are finding it incredibly difficult to compete and survive.
So if the greys weren't culled, what would be the likely impact in the future?
Well, the naturalists involved in this new programme beginning today believe quite genuinely that the UK has roughly 30 years in which to prevent the reds disappearing entirely. They're also quite worried that if the programme that they're now beginning in the north of Scotland doesn't take hold, and, you know, if £1.3 million is spent to try and protect reds in the Highlands, and if that doesn't work, then the public are going to start saying, well, we're just going to have to wash our hands of the reds. We can't spend millions and millions of pounds trying to protect them. We're just going to have to let nature take its course.
Is there any opposition to this culling at all?
There's an Edinburgh-based organisation called Advocates for Animals, so Scotland's main kind of animal rights campaign organisation, who are quite angry about this and have just recently released an opinion poll of Scots claiming that 54% of all adults in Scotland actually oppose this cull. They say that the grey's only crime is surviving in its environment, and they believe what the Scottish Natural Heritage, the government and Scottish Wildlife Trust ought to be doing is trying to develop a squirrel pox vaccine, or making and defending the kinds of woodland habitats that red squirrels really need. The difficulty is that the naturalists involved say that the vaccine could take up to a decade to produce, and creating and protecting these kinds of forests will take another decade. So utterly unrealistic, they say. They have to, with deepest reluctance, try and kill as many grey squirrels as they can possibly find in the north of Scotland.
And without getting too sentimental about it, how are they going to kill the grey squirrels? Will they come to a quick end?
Well, they obviously believe that they will. I mean, what's going to be happening is they're going to be placing specially designed traps along these river corridors, the main rivers going up from the central lowlands of Scotland up into the highlands. And when the squirrels are found in these boxes, they're going to be taken out and humanely killed, inverted commas, with a tap to the back of the head. In some cases, they're going to be private landowners going to be out there shooting them with their shotguns, because many landowners, particularly in rural areas of northern England and Scotland, quite regularly go out and kill grey squirrels, which they regard as a pest. The greys also destroy up to £10 million worth of timber every year.
Severin Carroll, reporting from Scotland. Well, that's it from Guardian Daily today. The producers were Ian Chambers and Tim Mabey. I'm Claire Catford. Thank you for listening.